big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ready? Once upon a time, there lived a man and his wife. They had all they wanted in this world except for one thing. For many years, they had longed to have a child whom they could love. Yet, no baby was born to them. At the back of their house was a window which looked out over a beautiful garden full of lovely flowers and fine vegetables. The garden was surrounded by a high wall. No one ever tried to climb the wall, for the garden belonged to a witch who was feared by everyone. One day, the wife stood at the window looking out into the garden. In one of the vegetable beds, she saw some fresh green salad. It looked so tempting that she longed to eat some. Every day that followed, she looked out of the window at that fresh green salad. The more she looked at it, the more she longed to eat it. Soon, she did not want anything else to eat. She grew thin and pale because she knew she could not have the salad. Her husband grew worried when he saw how thin she had become. "What is the matter with you, dear wife?" he asked. His wife pointed to the fresh green salad in the witch's garden. "Ah," he sighed, "if I cannot eat some of that salad, I shall surely die." "Rather than let you die," replied the man, "I shall climb into the witch's garden and bring you some salad." The man waited until twilight, then climbed over the high wall into the witch's garden. Then he quickly gathered up a handful of salad and scrambled back over the wall. His wife sat down at once and ate the salad. It tasted even better than she had imagined. It tasted so good that, by the next day, she was longing for more salad. So, once more, her husband felt he must climb over the wall and fetch some for her. Waiting until twilight again, the man clambered up to the wall and lowered himself into the garden. As his feet touched the ground, he nearly fell down with fright, for there stood the witch in front of him.
"How dare you come into my garden?" she shouted angrily. "And how dare you steal my salad?"
"It was for my wife," replied the poor man. "She longed so much for the salad that if she could not have it, she would have pined away and died." When the witch heard the man's tale, she lost her anger and took pity on him.
"If what you say is true," she said, "I will let you take as much salad as you wish. If you promise me one thing, when your wife has a child, you must give it to me. I shall treat it as well and look after it like a mother."
The poor man was so frightened that he agreed. Then he quickly gathered an armful of salad and scuttled back to his wife. Sometime later, a beautiful baby girl was born to this man and his wife. That very same day, the witch appeared. She reminded the man of his promise, and she took the child away with her. The witch named that baby Rapunzel. As the child grew, she became the most beautiful girl in the world. That's the end of that story. This book, Rapunzel, it was written a long time ago, but it was this version of this book was, I think it's like 1960 something. So these are the these are Lady Bird books. It was, how much was it? It was pretty cheap. It was 24p net. For some reason, it's 24p net. I never really understand what that means, net, or what's the other one? Anyway. So I thought I'd read you that little bit of, because it's Christmas time, isn't it? It's Christmas time. Well, Christmas has gone past. This is the Christmas special episode of this book, of this podcast, of the Psychovertical podcast. And I thought I'd, I always find Rapunzel quite a good Christmas story, a man who gives his child away for some salad. What's interesting about this book, it was written like in the 1960s, like this version, and it was very it was very like could see into the future, prophetic. Anyway, it was very because like in the future, well, A, you know, everyone's obsessed with fucking salad, but also B, no one would be having a baby, would they? They'd just be eating the salad. And the husband, poor old husband, she like sends him off. Now, how does she ever, you know, I guess the baby was like, it was actually like what's not vegetable based? Is it vegetable based? What's it called? A vegetable based baby, because it was basically just like fueled on salad, and it was beautiful as well, and it had massive long hair. So I know I don't want to spoil the rest of the story. What happens? It's quite a cool story. Amazing. I have this real. Is it like nudge? What's it called? Nudge theory, or so like in Ireland at the moment. Like 4 years ago, they started saying, there's lots of accidents. There's lots of accidents on the roads and. There's lots of accidents, and you know, like every single, it was like, it's very quiet, like lots of accidents. There's a few accidents on the also ones, and they sort of they kind of like start turning the dial on accidents, like lots of accidents. Probably there's lots of accidents in Ireland because you've got like 120,000 Ukrainians who drive on the wrong side of the road, and probably lots of them have cars, or you have, you know, there's probably reasons why there's suddenly. From nowhere, there's loads of accidents. It's not that people have suddenly started driving really badly, you know, but there's no like correlation between any other factor apart from, there's lots of accidents. And I remember saying to Vanessa, you know what this is? This is basically, they're going to do this for a couple of years, getting louder and louder and louder and louder. And so it's like, something must be done. And what they'll do, they'll reduce the speed limits everywhere in Ireland. On the pretext this is going to save lives, but actually it's for net zero. It's just for some, you know. And then eventually it's like, if you have an electric cars, they cause less accidents because you won't be able to charge them because like Ireland has no electricity capacity. And today I heard on the radio like they're going to reduce the speed limits everywhere by 20 miles an hour or something. So I have an ear for these kind of things. I have an ear for a push when someone starts like, there's lots of I remember when about 15 years ago, before anybody had electric cars, really, there was a lot of bad fumes off diesel cars and blah blah blah. Oh, it's really bad. And then, you know, then it's like, we need to be driving electric cars and all blah blah blah. Anyway, so I just find it really annoying. But anyway, so reading this book for my son, I was thinking like, God, maybe this is like, I thought the thing about being nudged and being like brainwashed and programmed by your betters. Is they were so much better at doing it in the past. They were really good. I was just been reading the tiger who came in for tea. I'll read that next podcast. But it's basically an argument against mass immigration, you know. But it in the pretext of like in the thingy of a tiger that comes for tea and like eats all the food and then just like fucks off and never comes back. So it's interesting. It's interesting. This So yeah, but salad, like the things you would do for salad. It's a lot of these books, a lot of these books are quite, there's a lot of stuff about babies. There's a lot of babies getting given away to people for like Vanessa, my wife's mother was given away because she was from a family with like 12 kids, and there was a couple who had no children, so they just gave Vanessa to this couple. She was 3 years old. She's actually quite old for a child, and they just gave them one of her children. And then and another family had an extra child, and they gave one of their children to this couple. So Sinead, Vanessa's auntie is not actually her auntie. It's just a random person who grew up with her mum and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of wacky. No documents or any kind of state stuff going on. So this week's podcast, what's it all about? Someone sent me a message. I've not had anyone really asking me to talk about anything. If anybody wants me to talk about something, I know you've all sent things before and I've just ignored them, but I'm trying to do more podcasts now. Someone wanted me to talk about authenticity. Authenticity. I think they thought that I was authentic, which if you can fake that, you're on for a winner. So authenticity. I've been thinking about this for a while because this person asked to think about my thoughts on authenticity, and I've decided I'm not actually very authentic. I'm just not authentic. I'm not authentic. I'm just not. I'm not very good at faking it. I don't have any filter. It'd be nice to think I was like a noble person who stood up for what's right and what he believed in, and you know, one of those people who would join the White Rose, you know, anti-Nazis and fighting them and get beheaded and all that kind of stuff, or you know, someone like that who's like, you know, you can't handle the truth. Oh no, he's a baddie, you know. So, but I don't think I am. I think I'm just someone who can't keep my mouth shut, and it's not a noble thing. It's just I think it's like a class thing. I think it's like a working class thing, because I think, you know, working class people, they haven't got anything to lose, have they really? Like, they could lose a job, I guess, but no one's going to cancel a bus driver. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're like a university professor, then you might get cancelled for saying the wrong thing. But if you're like cleaning toilets, you know, it's like, oh, we don't want people like you clean our shit up. So I've realised, although I do tend to speak my mind, I don't actually, it's not for any noble purpose. And I thought about this when my son was working in Poundland. If you're an American reader, listener, that Poundland is like, would be like dollar land. But let me know, it's a dollar and the euro and the pound are all kind of the same these days. But he was like dealing with like loads of like, the common people, you know, salt of the earth, you know, who wants salt, you know. So salt of the earth people, no, they weren't the salt of the earth, they were something of the earth, like manure of the earth. So they were like the lowest of the low. I don't want to disparage people shopping Poundland, but they were. And you know, so Ewan was like really shocked, like how people like that, they just say what's on their mind and they're just, you know, they just come out with everything. And he was basically like, oh dad, I totally understand, get where you are now, having met all these common people. So authenticity. Be your authentic self. So I think sometimes I've ever tried, like when you do like motivational speaking, so someone's paying you like loads of money and you know, you've got all these like people there, and you know, if you do a really good job and you'll get more gigs and people will, but I always found I just couldn't help be myself, I'd always be like, you know, you're there with loads of people that employed, you know, you'd be employed to go there and motivate people, you know, workers or whatever. And you're like, you know, remember, only work hard when people are looking and stuff like that, you know. And the boss is like, what the fuck's this guy? Who booked this guy? So yeah, the other day I was at the, I went over to the UK actually, and I went to a, if there's any children listening, I'll just lower this bit down. And I met with my other kids, my ready-made kids, Ella and Ewan, and we were in Sheffield and went to like a Indian restaurant, and there was the waiter, it was a woman, and she was like a young woman, and she had a real like whole accent. She's like, do you want, you know, what would be a whole thing to order? Do you want a chicken masala? Do you want chicken tikka masala? I'm like, oh no, I ain't got any chicken. I can have a lager in that. Anyway, so, and I was like, are you from Hull? And she's like, no, I'm from Huddersfield. I don't even know where Huddersfield is, but it's not. Anyway, it's probably near Hull. We all like, that's how Vikings used to speak in the olden days. You know, when they get the, so anyway, so I was like, oh, you're from Hull? And no, I'm from Huddersfield. So then I kept making jokes about Huddersfield, like, oh, Huddersfield. And anyway, so then towards the end of the evening, when we were about to pay the bill, I think I was like paying the bill, and I was like, oh, do you know the difference between like people from Hull and people from Huddersfield? And she's like, no, what's the difference? I was like, if you ask someone from Hull if they'd have sex with a 12-year-old, they'd say no. And then as I said the words have sex with a 12-year-old, she went like, wow, like as in this was not appropriate joke to be making at that moment. And as soon as he said like wow, I was like, oh, I gotta keep going, I gotta get to the punchline. And then I was like, but if you ask someone from Huddersfield if they have sex with a 12-year-old, they'd say 12-year-old what? And anyway, that was, there was no, she was, didn't find it funny, and I didn't find it funny either. It's kind of weird. I used to find it quite funny, that joke, because you just mix it around. Like, it can be New Zealanders versus Australians, or Alaskans versus, you know, people from Texas or something. You know, you can mix and match it. But yeah, she was, anyway, so I just felt like, you know, like the UK for some reason, like, I kind of had this impression that the police were going to turn up and like arrest me, like, so did you make an inappropriate joke to this young lady here? And I found the word lady offensive and ageist. When I was like leaving, I was like, God, I hope I'm not going to get stopped at like customs, you know, like, you know, so, you know, we have reason to believe you are, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was actually thinking about, you know, authenticity, but I think that joke kind of sums up that it wasn't about authenticity. It's just about not being able to say like stupid things like that, really. So you can turn it back up again now. Yeah. It was funny being in the UK. I know there's probably quite a lot of people listening to this who live in the UK. It's a little bit. So when I like go to the UK, it was a little bit like when I had a friend when I was a kid. It was called Stephen Ward, I think, and his dad was worked offshore, and he worked on oil rigs, and unfortunately he was working on Piper Alpha when it blew up. And Piper Alpha, if you don't know, it was like a big oil rig in like in the 80s that blew up. And I think it was like 160 people died. I think it must be like the biggest tragedy oil, you know, offshore in the UK anywhere, but massive, really like horrendous. There's a very good documentary about what happened to it. Anyway, so his dad died. So So I always like stuck it, you know, it was one of those things. It was like a really, you know, big thing. And I seem to remember, like, in those, in the 80s, like, anybody, if people worked offshore, it meant like they had shitloads of money. It was you know, it was like a really, to work offshore, like, there basically wasn't any jobs onshore, you know. So I don't think I knew anybody who had as a kid, you didn't really know anyone who had a good job. Most people's mums and dads seemed to be unemployed. Like, some people worked at Bird's Eye. There used to be a big Bird's Eye factory. Bird's Eye made like frozen fish and that kind of stuff. I remember as a kid, like, people saying about like Bird's Eye food that was off the back of a lorry, you know, that fell off the back of a lorry. It was basically, you know, you literally think it fell off the back of a lorry. Like, oh, in that lucky, must have been driving past our house and all these beef burgers fell off the back of the lorry and someone found them. But it basically means like someone was stealing them. There must have been a lot of theft from Bird's Eye. That's probably why Bird's Eye isn't, I don't think it's there anymore. Anyway, I remember once my mum got these beef burgers, and they were Bird's Eye beef burgers. And I never tasted anything that tasted so amazing. And what it was, it wasn't that the Bird's Eye beef burgers were amazing beef burgers. It was just that the quality of the beef burgers that we ate were just absolutely, like, I don't know what was in them, but it was like, it must have been like rank, horrible meat. I don't know. But like, I don't think I can still literally remember the taste of the Bird's Eye beef burgers. And I think I've wiped the memory of the other beef burgers, but they were just, it was like a kind of quality that you don't, which is surprising, actually. You don't really get it anymore. There's like quite a few things, like sterilized milk, that if you had, like, everyone got the milk from the milkman, and you'd either get like, you either got milk, you know, which was just milk, which was like full fat milk, and you'd have like an inch of like cream on the top, and it had like a little, you know, it came in a bottle, and you leave your bottle and milkman with it. It was very kind of environmentally friendly, like most things were in those days. And you got sterilized milk. I think that was the only two milks there were. Now, sterilized milk tasted like unbelievably awful. It was just like white toxic liquid. It was like horrendous. And if you ever went around someone's house, and, you know, you stayed over someone's house, and in the morning, the mum would like, do you want some cornflakes? And they'd give you some like really horrible cornflakes. And then they put like, you'd have a mouthful, and you'd be like, oh my God, like, what's this? And it'd have like steri milk on it. It's like, you know. But there's a few good things, back then, you know. That's a sign, you know, when you get old, I mean, when you're young, people going about, oh, the good old days and blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, oh, you're just talking out your ass. And but it is actually, I think it probably was true. There's like a lot of things. I can see why old people used to think that, because it probably was a lot better. And I think, you know, there's some not so good things, like dying of asbestosis and stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of things were like simpler in the past. You had no, I think it's you know, before the internet, I think things were probably a lot better. Everyone's a lot more ignorant, but we're all ignorant together. That was the important thing. But things like, there's things that you ate then that are almost, they're impossible to eat now because they don't make them. Do you know what I mean? Like sweets, like you're going to search for like the cola cubes you used to eat when you were a kid, or the chocolate limes or something, but the companies that made them don't exist anymore, so they've lost the recipe. So so every time you eat something, every time someone buys you some sweets like that, which you really shouldn't eat, it's amazing everyone's got any teeth, you know, you'd have a, you know, you it's always a disappointment, because it's never, you're thinking it's just going to taste like that did, but it never does. So I think I was born into a period of where you didn't really, people used both imperial and metric measurements. So when you bought some sweets, you get you get 2 ounces if you don't have a lot of money. And if you had a bit of money as a kid, you get a quarter. So what's that? 2 ounces and a quarter. Would that be a quarter of a pound? I'm guessing a quarter of a pound. So a quarter would be like a big paper bag full of, you know, sweets, full of like cola cubes, and two ounces would be like a measly little bag. You know, I'm guessing 2 ounces is half a quarter. But then it would go. But then I guess then you would you'd end up having. Then it'd be like 250 grams. I'll have 100 grams of cola cubes, please. Or I'd have 250 grams of cola cubes or something like that. And I feel like I've never really in one camp. Like I've been doing like quite a lot of building stuff out of wood recently. And you go down to the timber merchants and you're supposed to be like a real man, like, all that kind of stuff, you know. And you don't say anything. You're just like, And like, what do you want? You're standing at the counter, you know. Just give us some 2B8 and some nails or something. And they're like, what kind of? We don't do 2x8. We do 2x6 or 2x10. You know, like, or I'll say like, can we get me 8x2? And they're 8x2. We don't do 8x2. We do a 2x8. And they're like, all right, 2x8. Sorry. And what kind of nails? Do you want galvanized nails, twisted nails, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they can tell you're not a proper man because they're trying to, you know, do you want bent nails? Oh, bent nails, they're not real things. And all that. Yeah, they are. Anyway, do you want screw nails? Do you want nail screws? So I always get confused. I'm always like, oh, can I have a 2x100mm, please? And they're like, huh? So I literally have to carry a piece of wood with me and I go, give us some of that, will you? Treated, pressure treated. Anyway, do you want it rough sawn? Yeah, I like it rough. I find it quite hard dealing with, like, that's, again, not only am I trapped between Imperial and thing, they're my people. Those manual people who work in like lumber mills and who cut glass in when you break your window. Those kind of real men. But I'm not. I'm like trapped in this world of like climbers, where they don't even, you know, they don't even know the difference between pressure treated wood. Do you know what I mean? And not a normal wood. If they'd be building a woody type thing, climbing wall, and they'd be like. I'd be like, yeah, using exterior or interior plywood. And they'd be like, oh, what's the difference? You know, they'd be like, oh, God, you people. So my friend, his dad died. And so I always had this kind of, I was always kind of interested. I was always kind of interested in Piper Alpha. It was something like stuck in my mind for like a long time. And I read this thing once, and it was like a priest, like a vicar, who'd visited Piper Alpha. I think it was like the week before it blew up, and he said how there was this like palpable sense of something bad was going to happen, like there was just something in the air, some tension, some little, you know, like subtle things, you know, like. Light switches didn't work or whatever, that he just felt this like sense of dread that something bad was going to happen. So I kind of get the same feeling when I go to the UK these days. There's just kind of a even like coming into the airport, like nothing seems to be working, like all the escalators and the travelators and all that kind of stuff. None of them seem to be working. And then same in Manchester Airport, they all seem to be switched off. And it's like, are they broken and no one can afford to fix them? Or are they switched off to save electricity, net zero and all that kind of stuff? And just loads of weird things. Maybe it's just an observation. So yeah, anyway, so it was nice. It was nice being in, went to Hathersage, where I used to travelled around and stuff. And so yeah. So I also did, what else has been happening? I did a 10K the other day. 10K. 10K? Oh, I'm doing it. I'm doing 8.5 ton instead. Anyway, so it was, I don't know. Anyway, so every Boxing Day in Galway, there's the Athen Rye. Hey, the fields of Athen Rye. Oh, hey. There's the Fields of Athen Rye 10K. And Vanessa always like signs me up. But I literally not ran more than 10 feet for like a year. And every year I do the Fields of Athen Rye, I'm always like, oh, next year I'm going to train for the Fields of Athen Rye. So I'm just like rocking up and running 10K. And I always, it's like 2 months. So it's 6 months before the Fields of Athen Rye. And I'm like, right, I need to start training for the Fields of Athen Rye. Then before you know it, it's like 4 weeks till the Fields of Athen Rye. Oh yeah, if I do a run every 2 days, every other day, you know, if I do a 5K every other day, I'll get my fitness up for doing the. And then it's like, you know, it's like Christmas Eve. You know, if I go for a run tonight, I'll be warmed up, ready for the fit. Anyway, and it never happens. So we end up. Turning up in Athen Rye, and it was about like, I don't know, there's a lot of people. Someone said there was like 1,000 people or something, but there's a lot of people there. And you have, I don't know if you've ever done a 10K, but anyway, we're always late, you generally get there and everyone's like running off. So anyway, so this time, but there's like, there's the pace people, and they have like a big placard, and they're like, you know, like half an hour, 40 minutes, blah blah blah, and I'm always, I think in the past I've been able to run like a 10k in like under an hour, and I think the reason was I was probably doing more stuff, the cardio kind of stuff then, and it didn't seem to be that difficult, like I wasn't really pushing myself. So anyway, so this time I was like, I rock up, I'm like, oh, I've not literally ran anywhere since the last 10K, like a year ago, the last Athen Rye. I'll go in the hour, you know. So I get behind the person, and it's like, you know, the thing goes, someone fires a gun, and everyone starts like shuffling, and they go faster and faster and faster. And then I'm running along, and I always have this. I remember that guy, what's his name? I went on tour with that man who walked down the Amazon. He's on the telly. He used to be on the telly. I don't know if he still is. Anyway, he walked down the Amazon. He's like a survivalist type. He goes around naked in the jungle, all that kind of stuff. And he had this thing about getting motivated by someone who's like better than you or something. And, you know, like listening to someone like shouting in your ear or something. So I always used to pretend that I was like, you know, like when people are doing the, in the paras or in the marines or something, and they're running like the last thing, there's always some little ginger-haired Scotsman next to them going like, come on sir, you fat knacker, get you, and they're like shouting advice, you're trying to motivate you by saying you're worthless scumbag or something. So yeah, I often use that technique. Imagine someone's running behind next to me telling me to like not be weak and not be all that kind of stuff. So I was running, and you know, you're running in the hour thing, which is, you know, pretty slow if you run, but it's fast enough for me. So you're running along, and I'm like, oh, this is a pace, I can keep this pace up, and everything's fine. And then you're looking around, you're like, yeah, the people around here, they look pretty fit, they look, you know, they've been doing some training, but you know, they don't know that, you know, I must look like not like them, but you know, deep down I've got the heart of a lion. Anyway, once I saw the four kilometers, I'm like, is that counting, is that, have I got 4 kilometers left, or have I only run 4 kilometers? And it was, unfortunately, it was like the latter, and I was like, oh my god, like I suddenly feel very tired, I don't think keep this pace up. So as soon as I was like doing all right for 4 kilometers, maybe should stick doing, maybe should have not stick, start doing park run or something. So I started, then I was like, oh God, I don't think I keep this pace up for another like 6 kilometers. So then I started slackening off a bit. And then I was like, oh, wouldn't it be awful if you started walking? I saw a few people walking. And then this little voice in your head's like, why don't you have a little walk? Go on, have a little walk. You'll feel better if you have a little walk. I was like, no, I'm not having a little fucking walk. And as you're like having this conversation in your head with this stupid voice, like more and more like all the fit people are walking past you. Anyway, so about 6 kilometers, I was like, oh, I need to have a little bit of a walk. So I started having a little bit of a walk. I thought I'll walk to that lamppost over there. Thinking about lampposts, as soon as you get to one, you can always see another one. So I was like walking a little bit. I was like, I don't think I was even tired. I don't think I was tired, but I couldn't tell why I was tired. Like I wasn't out of breath, and my legs didn't seem to be tired. But I just had a general feeling I need to have a little walk. And the only good thing about having a little walk when you're doing one of these races is other people, they start having a little walk as well, don't they? They're running past you and they're like hanging on to dear life to get their, you know, get to the end in like an hour and a half or something. Then they see some fucking guy walking along and they're like, oh, I need to have a little walk as well. It's like contagious. So when they slow down, have a little walk, you're like, yeah, you weak bastard. So anyway, so I walked for about 100 meters and I started running again, but oh God, I felt a lot tired after that walk. And suddenly I was like, wow, I was like running like slower and slower. And then you start thinking like, actually, I think I can walk faster than I can run. So you have another little walk and you're like, no, actually I can run faster than I can walk. You start running again. And then you start noticing like, fucking hell, like the people who are passing me out now, like fucking big fat, you know, unfit looking people, like people look like they're gonna have a heart attack. And they're like, you know, I'm not gonna let them beat me. So you start like running past them, and then you're like, oh, I need to have a little walk. And then they pass you out, and you're like, fucking hell, I've got to keep up with that fucking big fat guy over there. And then and they all beat you in the end. That's the thing. And I was running behind this guy, and he just looked like he was gonna die. And he looked like totally unfit, totally massively fat, massively just wrong gear, wrong. He probably had blood running down his legs from chafing or something. And I was like, God, this guy, he's not walking. He's running the whole thing. If this guy was fit, he would be fucking amazing. He'd be like an Olympic athlete. He'd be like doing Ironman, because he has got zero technique, zero fitness, and yet he's not walking, and he's gonna bloody do it. Like the people are doing it in half an hour. Like this guy might take like an hour and a half, but you know, he is as equally as good mentally as someone who do it in half an hour. Unfortunately, I was neither. So that was, you know, and you get to the end, and I know Vanessa did it in like 49 minutes. So she's a bit faster than me. And I was like, funny, you don't realize how long, like, you know, if you knocked off like 30 seconds from it in 10, it's actually quite a long way. So I think I got in like 10 minutes, you know, an hour and 10 minutes or an hour and 15 minutes or something. So anyway, so I came in, and Vanessa's like, oh, it didn't even look like you were tired. Well, yeah, I've been fucking walking most of the way. So, but yeah, I haven't got the eye of the tiger. I was trying to think, maybe you have to really care, don't you? Like to begin with, it's like, oh, it'd be good to do under an hour just 'cause it's like a good benchmark of like, this is your fitness. You can do it in under an hour. But then you're like, and then it's like, well, an hour and one minute's pretty good, and then an hour and 5 minutes is okay, and then it's just like, oh, just let me get to the end, just get to the end. So it was next year I'm going to start training. I was wondering if I started training, and every time I went for a run, I had to be a minute faster than I was the time before. Is that too much? I don't know about running, because that would probably mean by the end of a year of doing that, I'd be doing it fast. I'd have finished before I got there, because I'd be so fast. They'd be like, how did you do it? Oh, I just did a spreadsheet, and I just worked out how to run the whole thing in a minute, and that's what I've been working towards. So yeah. But the good thing, Vanessa doesn't mind though. At least I turned up. At least that's like, life is all about turning up, isn't it, really? That's one of the things I've learned. Just turn up. Doesn't matter how humiliated you are by big fat dinner ladies passing you out, you know, talking to the mates and smoking a fag as you're like trying to keep up with them. And But yeah, your mind is such a terrible thing, isn't it? Like, why? How the fuck do you get through life with shit, with the weak shit inside your head? Like just spoiling, you know. Is it like a protection mechanism to try and stop you from doing yourself an injury or something? I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like, I think people, you know, there was some guy who did it in half an hour, did the race in half an hour. Like, you kind of think, like, what? You can't have much going on in his life, can he? If you're going to dedicate so much time to doing, like, fucking 10K in, you know, in half an hour. Like, what else you got going on in your life? So, yeah, again, that's one of those things, isn't it? It goes in your head when you're running around, like, who cares? Someone told me this story. There was this TV program, and they had these Aboriginal guys and some sort of Australian SAS guys, and it was going to be like an adventure race, and they're going to race across some, you know, no man's land in Australia, and it was all going to be televised. So they set off, these two teams, and then at one point the Aboriginal guys got to this like watering hole, and it was all really beautiful and green, and there was loads of you know, fish and stuff, and they just stayed there. That was it. That was the end of the program. That was the end for them. They were like, "Oh, we're just gonna stay here." And they're like, "No, you're doing a race, adventure race. We're televising it. Nah, we're just gonna stay here. This is really nice here. Why would we want to go somewhere else?" So yeah. So maybe they're equally as weak. I don't know. Maybe running 10K isn't very good. Like I wasn't able to walk very well for a few days afterwards, but So yeah, there's kind of like, you have like good injuries, don't you? You have like good pain and bad pain. You know, there's like good wounds, good bits where your body's bleeding from, and not so good bits where you're bleeding from and stuff. So there's good cuts and bad cuts and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, but I think my dad would be despairing if you could hear this, because he's, you know, he's like, I don't know how old he is, but he's getting up there in age, and he'd probably be doing it in like 50 minutes as well. So I know, it's terrible, isn't it? So what's this podcast about? What have I covered so far? I've done salad. I've done, you know, I can't even remember the, I have trouble remembering that word. What was it again? Authenticity. Authenticity. I think when I was younger, there was a point in my life, like I always agreed. I always tried to fit in with everybody else. I didn't want to have a difference of opinion. Although I say that, but like one of the things that was keeping me awake is I kind of realized that I had this like image of myself as a person, as like an actor in my story, and I don't think that person was real. I think it was like an illusion, like a delusion. Like I didn't think. I remember like Ian Parnell once said I was the most ambitious person he'd ever met, and I just could not believe it at the time. Like, what do you mean? Like, but he was totally right. And so often when I say about fitting in, maybe that wasn't true either. Maybe I didn't want to fit in, or maybe I did speak my mind or whatever. I think actually what it is, I guess when I was younger, I would speak my mind, but often my mind wasn't, I would judge it now as not being well balanced or well attuned to reality or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know that thing, like when you're young, if you're not a socialist, you've got no heart, and if when you're old, if you're not a capitalist, you've got no brain or whatever. So yes, I think maybe it's much easier to sound authentic when you're just saying what everybody else is saying or thinking. You know, you'd pick. I remember, like, you go to a party and you'd find that one, you know, that one guy who was a lot older than you, it'd seem at the time, you know, he was probably, you were like some young person, you know, and he'd have like, he'd already be divorced and, you know, he would have had a proper job and all that kind of stuff. And those kind of people were much more, in my mind, much more kind of right wing, and they had these like reactionary kind of views about stuff. And but really, looking back, they were just like sensible and like pragmatic and realistic about life. But when you're young, you just can't, you all want to, you know, you're just not like, that's why they shouldn't give young people the vote, I think, because they'd make a right fucking, you know, right. I think it's, maybe that's a sign of, that is a sign of being reactionary, where you start thinking that you have to have the vote, you have to own something. You know, you have to have like some skin in the game. You know, you can't, the only people who can vote are people who don't get, won't get anything out of it. You know, like, so yeah, so that's a real sign of being a reactionary. So, but I think, yeah, you become more authentic, I think, when you have, and also when you're young, as I say, you've got nothing to lose. But as you get older, you do have more to lose, and you have more, you know, you have like, you know, your friendships can, you know, you can, your friendships can sort of be damaged by, if you have really strong opinions about things, or people, I don't know you anymore. Like, a few people have said that to me, like, what happened, you know, what happened to you? Why, you know, why do you believe all this crazy stuff? But, I think coming, making up your own, trying to make up your own mind about stuff, you know, to try and really understand something. I would say something like the war in Ukraine. Like, I'd say I have a differing opinion on it to, you know, like almost every single person I know. But I would say that I've probably invested, you know, 1,000 hours into trying to come to the opinion I have about it, and they haven't, as in they have not taken any, they've not really spent any time investing any time in their opinion. Their opinion's just what everybody else's opinion is. So, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to try and change their opinion, because I think that's kind of the sad part of it, about it, is that isn't really, is it authentic? Like, I don't really care what their opinion is, and I'm not going to waste my time trying to explain. Like, I'll say something, you know, but it's kind of pointless. It's kind of a pointless, it's a waste of time to, like, I think that's kind of maybe a demonstration of like learned helplessness, is when you eventually like give up trying to point, you know, like, say, like in Syria, you know, they keep going on about like Assad's secret torture prisons, you know, and how terrible they are. But we were sending, you know, Al-Qaeda to those torture prisons, you know, for the last 20 years, you know, when Assad was on our side in the war against terror and all that kind of stuff. So we've known those, you know, we've actively sent people to those prisons. So we knew they were there, you know, so it's not like it's a big surprise. But if you try and say that to someone, you know, who's giving, you know, in the coffee shop, someone who's sat next to, they'll probably just think you're like a loony or something. Because you're actually kind of saying something that's not, you know, not the default thing to say or something. So I don't know if, I think to actually, you know, when you see, when you go on social media and you'll see someone and they just keep going on and on and on and on and on about the same thing, and you're like, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person who's, every time they go on Facebook, they're gonna just go on about, you know, COVID vaccines or Starmer or, you know, Donald Trump or whatever. Like, it's just a waste of time, because, you know, you're not, it's just dead words, dead thoughts. Like, just do the work, do your own, you know, get some two befores and screw them together or something. Like, do something, you know. But I think this is more of a Chinese Chinese way of seeing the world. Like, you know, like in American politics, say, you know, name a Chinese politician, you know, a Chinese, there's going to be one, but, you know, there always is. No, but like, you know, I could probably name you like, you know, five black American, you know, politicians, well-known politicians, but I couldn't name you one Chinese one. And, you know, there's plenty of Chinese, you know, heritage, you know, people who live in America, but they just don't really involve themselves in all that shit. They just kind of get on with their own shit and do very, very well. You know, there isn't like a huge big diaspora of like impoverished, homeless, drug addict Chinese people, you know, but there is of other, you know, there is of other groups. So I think I've taken that kind of view of these kind of things, is try and come to some, and on your own, you know, using your own eyes and ears and reading and listening and trying to come to an understanding about things that are going on that might affect you, and then just keep it to yourself. Like, just try and make a, you know, like a, I remember I met some guy who's some sort of SAS guy when I was in the Brecon Beacons, and he was saying about people who have post-traumatic stress, and they have to rebuild their map of the world, of map of reality, you know, over the top. You've got like a map of reality that you use to navigate day to day, and then you go and fight in a war, and, you know, for like years and years and years and years, killing people, high stress kind of stuff, and your map doesn't work anymore. It doesn't fit your new reality. So you have to like rebuild this map and stuff. So I think for me, authenticity is a word for something. It's like an internal, thing. It's like trying to work out, you know, trying not to just carry the baggage of something that I think is not worth carrying, like to do with, you know, like trying to make a living. You know, if I hold on to the idea that, say, there's someone out there who's trying to keep me down, or, you know, is trying to make my life harder or whatever, or blah blah blah, you know, like a very kind of working class kind of idea, you know, like I just have to reject all that kind of stuff because it's not kind of helpful, really. So it's kind of, I guess it's about, yeah, it doesn't mean that I have to say that to anybody, you know, do a whole, you know, it's just my own internal map of something, of like how, to, if this is a, problem, or this is, I have to do this, what's the best, you know, what's the best way to do this or whatever. So yeah. So I think it's very important to be authentic, but whether you can, I could equally be as misguided, deluded, you know, gone down a rabbit hole, whatever, you know. I think, because I think often you hear people, you know, there's people I trust to listen to and take their, you know, take their viewpoints and whatever, but you also still need to always be aware that, you know, there's like a lot of, you know, everyone's trying to work it all out at the same time, and often there's a very there's like a cone of knowledge. It often comes from a very small single point. Maybe you'll hear like one person, if you listen to a lot of podcasts and watch a lot of YouTube videos of people talking about stuff, you know, you'll like one person will come up with like an original idea, and then very quickly, you know, everyone else will start using that idea, and the cone of, you know, like of influence is that before you know it, like, you know, one person has this original idea, and before you know it, everyone's saying it. But that idea could be wrong, and people might misinterpret it or whatever. So it's you know, when something comes into your head, you have to add some new lines or some more features to your map of the world and reality. You're like, is this is this trustworthy? You know, this piece of information, you know, like who, you know, when it's, yeah. I think, and also I think we live in such a drama, a world of such drama. You know, there'll be something on, you know, you just know that some people are very balanced and they're not trying to sell you anything and they're not trying to gain anything from you. They're just literally expressing the same desire to try and understand things, and they're telling you what they're discovering at the moment, where other people are anything like commercial, they're generally trying, like if you just see the way things are titled or the way someone's speaking or whatever, like often if you having to say, like if you turn the sound down and just look at someone talking, you'll be able to tell if this person's trustworthy or not just by the way they're speaking and their mannerisms and the way they dress and the way the things are edited together and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. So yeah, so I wasn't really going to talk about authenticity. So yeah. I think it's maybe it's also good to just sometimes not say anything rather than being, because there's like a little bit of there's like a form of like humiliation where you have to agree, you feel you have to agree to something, but you don't really agree with it. So sometimes to avoid that humiliation, you have to say something, you know, just to give. Like I think sometimes people can't really tell, you know, people really want to know what your point is. Like, are you on my side? If you're not my side, you must be on the other side. So often, you know, you can just say, oh, I'm just being devil's advocate here. What about this? And you'll say something. And when you say, I'm just being the devil's advocate, you almost like have a get out of jail card. You can say something, you know, it's a little bit like you cannot, if you say it with a smile on your face, they don't have to take you seriously. I guess that's like being the jester, the court jester. You know, if you actually, the court jester is like a very important person in the court because they can say things that people don't want to hear. So yeah, to say it with a smile on your face, it's like and so yeah, but yeah, but mainly I would say I'm taking it practically I'm using my map wisely, I think, in my life, but I'm not really advertising it. I'm not really going around like preaching to people, you need to do this, you need to do that, because I think there's like everyone is, you know, when you go on like Instagram, like everyone is like, you know, always be closing, you know, they're always, everyone's pushing who they are, who they, you know, to give like a certain, you know, brand. Everyone's like branded. I've noticed there's all these, I really hate these videos on Instagram where someone's like really close to their phone and they're talking in a like a, it's almost like a cult kind of way, like, oh, if you want to be really good at crimps, try this. It begins with crimps, and then it always goes into more like, do you know, like get like personal trainers who are talking about, you know, like, I don't know, like mental health. I don't know, it's a bit bad because I've talked to mental health as well, but it's like everyone is like, I don't know, everyone's, but do I do it? Maybe I do, don't know. Maybe I'm doing it now. But yeah, but you wouldn't take me seriously. That's the difference. But no, there's like a weird, like, no, it's a shame if you're being earnest, if you're being honest and earnest and people just laugh at you, because it's kind of not really, it's not really cool to be earnest. I am often on social media, you'd be, it's like sometimes it's like a way you have to just get something off your chest, don't you? There's something going on, then you just have to. But hopefully, in the light of day, you're like, you know, I never delete social media. That's probably about. If I'm going to delete social media, I'll delete all of it all at once. But I don't really like going back and like deleting. You know, if you write something and someone, you know, someone writes something really racist or something, or something, you know, not very nice in the comments, it's like, I really don't want to go and start deleting people's comments. I just let people, delete them themselves if you think differently of it, whatever. So that's my bit on authenticity. I think the person was asking it because they were it was to do with like a business, like they were starting a business, and it was about, I guess it's about whether you create like a brand and you have to stick with it. Like, it's definitely not very good. It's definitely not very good if you want to be a brand. I remember what's this guy, Alistair Humphreys, who started the micro adventure kind of thing. He like cycle around the world and stuff. And he was really good. He was really good at just avoiding anything to do with politics or anything like that. And it is really awful when you see someone who you really like and he's suddenly spouting something you just think's like crap, basically. And he was like really, really good at avoiding anything to do with politics or anything that was that would like split his, people who liked him. But then I remember when Black Lives Matter, turned on, he suddenly was like, Black Lives Matter kind of thing. And I remember thinking like, that's such a shame, like you've managed to maintain this separation for so long, for so many years, and venture, and now you've gone down this, you've kind of the pressure is not enough. It's not enough to say nothing anymore, really. You have to actively come out and say something. So if you're not with us, you're against us. That's all George Bush said. So I think what celebrities manage to stay out of, I guess there are some actors who manage to do that. Just say you're not interested. I'm not interested. I met this woman. She was a judge. I was in Spain, and she was on some kind of European court, and we were like talking, and she was like, "Oh, I don't have any interest in politics or something," She basically said she had no opinions on anything, and then when I started talking to her about certain things, it became evident that she had like very strong opinions on lots of things. But nearly all of them were like counter to the narrative that you're supposed to have, probably. And I was thinking, like, it's not that you don't have an opinion. It's just that your opinions are the wrong opinions. So you just pretend you have no opinions. You just kind of, it's like in the Soviet Union where if you had strong opinions, you just write science fiction books instead, with like, put your opinions, make them about aliens on a different planet or something. So I think if you're being a brand, or you're being somebody, if you're gonna tell people or express how you feel about things, or not keep quiet about how you feel about things, then you are gonna like just piss off like 50% of the people, and they're gonna think, I've had this in the past where. Like even with my books, I could probably if I just had LGBT rainbow things, on all my social media, and Black Lives Matter and all the Ukraine flags and all that kind of stuff, I could probably sell about 30% more books, or maybe more. And I know I've actually had arguments with people saying, don't buy this book. This guy is a neo-Nazi or something, some ridiculous thing. I would never buy a book by him because he's such a, awful person. And some of the things, it's like, what have I actually done? And they're like, I don't know, but I've heard that and some of the things. One was that I condone women. I condone like women being sexually attacked when they were out running, and just the most bizarrest things. So I think that's probably the flip side of it, is even if you really try and keep the most pristine, fake version of yourself that you face out to the public, They'll get you for something. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's real or it doesn't matter. You'll trip up really. So I guess that's the just by at least like I would say like I don't think in I think I started being a bit of a controversial person. I just kind of stopped pretending. I never pretended, but I suddenly had more of a reach where if I said something, you know, more people would hear it. I think about like probably like 2014 since then, really. And it has like has cost me a lot. Like I'm no longer sponsored, really. I lost even when I made like Psycho Vertical, like people were writing to one of the people who funded that film saying, do they realize what an awful person I am? And various things. But I would say that everything that I was talking about then, which when, you know, things that people probably thought about them, but no one was going to talk about them, are much more like mainstream now. And so I don't think there's anything any position I've ever taken or whatever that I wouldn't still defend that was, you know, that it made sense then and it probably still makes sense now. So it's, you know, like, but I guess if I took like a strong view of something, it was actually based on really thinking, you know, quite like I wouldn't take a strong view on something I didn't know anything about. So then I'd probably just take like the default position, you know. So yes, you will take in the short term, it will damage you or destroy your brand or, you know, cause all sorts of problems for you. But in the long term, you might be proved to have made to have been right to stick by your guns. But that doesn't mean that all is forgiven. Because I think once you stick to what's right, what you think is right, what you should, you know, believe in and, you know, stick to your guns about, like people often people don't like people get things wrong, but they kind of really hate people get things right. You know, like no one's going to come back years later and say, oh, when you said about this and I thought you were a dickhead, you know, actually you turned out to be right. Like sometimes that does actually happen sometimes, but mainly it's like, well, you're right about that, but that just shows that, you know, that you're a bad un or something. And but those people don't really matter, do they? I guess it's how you feel about it, you know. Like again, it's this thing of like a form of like humiliation is that you agreed with, you know, you think, I guess I think back to situations where people would say things. I guess it's also defending something. Like I would say, you know, like working class people, white people in the UK are kind of portrayed as being racist and all that kind of stuff. But having grown up in that world, I would have a completely different view of it. Like I would say that world, those people grew up in a multicultural world much more than middle class people ever did. And they grew up, you know, like I grew up with like refugees before refugees were the thing, you know. And I don't ever remember. I remember like people, like if you have any weakness, people will attack it. You know, so if you're a woman, they would attack your gender. If you're a black, they would attack your skin color. But if you were got glasses, you know, if you were got a lisp, if you got red hair, like that's what human beings do. They find your weakness and they attack it. But you know, like growing up with, like, you know, it just wasn't cool to be racist. Like in the 80s, it just wasn't. You know, everyone wanted to be Michael Jackson. Everyone, you know. Everyone wanted to be Eddie Murphy, all that kind of stuff. It just wasn't cool. So yeah, so I think, you know, often your authenticity is you stand up for your own. Like I'll stand up, you know, like as you know, I've stood up to defend climbing and climbers about people saying they're racist and they're not inclusive and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so I'll go out my way to defend climbers, even if, you know, like 80% of climbers think I'm a racist for doing it, or think I'm a, you know, despicable person for doing it. So it's, I guess it's, maybe it's just about, maybe, like deep down, maybe it's about a challenge, is making things, like I definitely believe that the more difficult you make something, the more, difficulty creates its own tension and energy. And, you know, like when you start running out of money, that's when you have to really start, you know, generating some kind of real creative ways of making money. You know, you could become like criminal mastermind, or you could just start writing books about abseiling or something. But it's kind of, you could call it self-destructive. Like, being authentic is self-destructive, or is it self-destructive? I don't know, but it is destructive, and it is breaking down possible, you know, like ways of making money or making a living or influencing people or getting more followers or whatever. But it makes you have to work a lot harder and to be more creative and to do things that have to be a lot better than what other people are doing. And, you know, you have to be, so it's the same with like going off to do things, you know, climbing with novice climbers on big walls, or going to solo big walls, or going to really cold places out of season or something. You're making something that's difficult, like living is difficult, but you're, by pissing everybody off and after people thinking you're a racist, you know, homophobic, Islamophobic, blah blah blah, you know, person, it kind of makes it all more fun, I guess. You know, it gets, you know, maybe it's about confusing people, I don't know. So anyway, I should wind this up. Shall I read you the rest of this book? Oh, it's a bit too long. I can't be arsed reading all that. maybe we should start this. The tiger came in for the tea was a lot. Oh yeah, it's too long, that is. Anyway, so get a copy of Rapunzel. I highly recommend getting hold of like 1960s, 1970s copies of Ladybird books. Anybody's got any kids? And there's lots of great titles in there. Sleeping Beauty is a bit shit, but there's some really good books. And they're kind of quite like in the Ladybird version of Little Red Riding Hood, like the grandma gets eaten, and the woodsman like cuts the wolf in half, and there's the most terrifying picture of a wolf in the bed you've ever seen in your life. Like, it's amazing how dark these books were in those days, where now it's it's probably a bloke who's Rapunzel, you know, however, probably a test tube baby or something, I don't know, but it's probably still eating salad. Anyway, so that's it. Sorry for the long rambling thing. I just felt like I had to get this podcast done before it was 2025, or is it 2020? It's 26. Anyway, 2025, Christmas special, late Christmas special podcast. And has anybody got any technical questions? Send them to me. And until next time, stay safe and stay authentic.